of people's lives. If, in fact, if you have, just take a second and stand up right now. If you have been touched by Equip, please stand up. Okay, now what I want you to do is I want everybody to look around. These are the folks, and I'm going to talk about some of these folks here in a little bit. These folks are becoming the backbone of this church because of the things that God is doing inside of them, the changes that he's made, which we'll talk about that a little bit more in a bit. Okay, go ahead and have a seat. All right, enough of that self-promotion. Yes. So welcome, welcome, welcome on a 4th of July on a beautiful morning. For those of us that are here, welcome. For everybody who is watching online, good to see you today. And so we are starting a new series today called Important Things. Important Things. So, which means you better pay attention because we're going to talk about some important things. That's exactly right. So today, the first of the important things that we're going to talk about is something that is very, very dear to my heart because it's something that God has been at work in me for about 12 years now. And so we're going to be talking about contentment. My whole life, I lived in, off and on, in discontentment. How many of you have experienced discontentment? And for the rest of us that didn't raise our hands, that applies to all of us because we've all been there. We have all been discontent. Now, oftentimes when you hear someone talk about contentment, it's people say, you know, I have what I need, I have what I want. I'm content with where I am right now. So when I say the word contentment, what are some things? This is going to be a little interactive this morning. So when I say the word contentment, what are some things that come to your mind? Peace, good. What else? Happiness, okay. What else? Stability, ooh, I like that. Yes. What else? Gratitude, yes, very good. What else? Faith, yes. Yeah, that's good. What else? Purity, yeah. Look, contentment. There's a lot of things that go into us living in contentment. So the question that I want us to begin wrestling with right now is this. Is it possible to experience contentment for extended periods of time? Or is contentment only something that I can get little pieces of here and there? Can I experience contentment for extended periods of time? Can contentment become normal to us? We've heard a lot about the new normal. We've got a new normal and stupid stuff. But we've heard a lot about new normal. I would suggest to you that contentment should be the norm for people who are Christians. Christians should be living in contentment. A lot of us don't. A lot of us don't live in contentment. We worry about the cost of living. We worry about all kinds of stuff. I would suggest that discontentment should be the anomaly. Discontentment should not be the norm for us as believers. If we are living in discontentment, it should be a red flag that something isn't right and that I don't want to keep this feeling. That ought to be my response, and not just to accept it and say, well, this is life, this is just the way that it is. That's not what God intended for us. Okay, so let's see what God has to say through our scriptures, and let's see how Jim works the TV today. Okay, well, it's a good start. So we're going to start in Philippians chapter 4. So if you have your Bibles and you'd like to follow along there, take a look at Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 13. And this is out of the NIV Bible, so let's go ahead and get started. So Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 13 says this: I rejoiced greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all of this through him who gives me strength. Okay, for those of you who did not grow up around the Bible and you did not grow up around these words like Philippians and Ephesians and all these big words, you know, what are they? So Philippians are a group of people from a city called Philippi. The Apostle Paul wrote this letter to the Philippians, to the church in Philippi. Now, this is a church who really loved Paul. As he was going about doing his evangelistic missionary work, they really loved him, and they would send him money. They would send him supplies because he had to raise his own support. So he's writing to them at this point, expressing his thankfulness because they had just sent him another gift. And so this book of Philippians, this letter, was written as a thank you to the folks in to the church in Philippi. Now, where do you suppose Paul was at when he wrote his letter to the Philippian church? He was in prison. He was in prison. That's exactly right. Think about what he said there. Think about what he said. Let's just see what he said. I just renewed your concern. Indeed, you were concerned to show it. I'm not saying this because I need. I've learned to be content in whatever the circumstances, which means he's on house arrest. He is on house arrest. He cannot leave. Concerned about when he is going to be executed. He has the death sentence hanging over his head. And he says he has learned to be content in all circumstances. Interesting. Because he knows that contentment does not come from prosperity. Contentment doesn't come from possessions. Contentment doesn't depend on who you've been coupled up with or not coupled up with. Where does contentment come from? He said he has learned to be content. We don't pray for contentment. God, make me content. No. It doesn't work that way. Because look at what he said. I have learned the secret of being content. We learn things by doing. He has learned how to be content. How do we learn how to be content? Well, what did he say at the very end? I can do anything. I can do all of this through the one who gives me strength. He has learned through his relationship with Jesus. And he has been given strength to do whatever God has called him to do, and he has become obedient. And through his obedience, he has learned how to be content. How does that stack up with your life? Have you learned how to be content through obedience? Through obedience to God? Have you learned what it is to walk in contentment because of obedience? Not because of your possessions, not because of your job, not because of your family life, not because of anything temporary, but you have learned contentment by walking in obedience. How does that stack up with how you are currently living your life? Is this you? Most of the American church, this ain't them. The American church doesn't live like this very often. So how do we learn to be content? All right. Oh, you got to fill in the blank. You got to fill in the blank. The fill in the blank is we can learn to be content. You might not have figured that out after I said it about 40 times. We can learn to be content. So we learn this way. So let's take a look. Our next passage is in Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 24. All right, Matthew 6, 19 through 24 says this: Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy. I love that. I love the word vermin. Vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. That last sentence is pretty potent. You cannot serve God and money. It is impossible to exalt God and exalt money. One of these is going to get jealous of the other. And if we are exalting money, we can certainly rest assured that God will be jealous. So our next fill in the blank says this: I must recognize what my priorities truly are and choose between those that oppose each other. I must recognize what my priorities truly are and choose between those that oppose each other. That means if my focus is on serving myself through my stuff. This is really doing something strange. If my focus is on serving myself through my stuff, it says that my body will be full of darkness. If my job is my top priority, if my job takes priority over my faith in God, my body will be full of darkness. If my family takes priority over my God, my body will be full of darkness. If my own security takes precedent over my faith in God, my body will be full of darkness. And I will be full of all kinds, I'll have all kinds of other issues that I deal with. Fear and anxiety over losing my stuff. Fear and anxiety over losing my family. Fear and anxiety over the upkeep of my stuff. Temptation to compare what I have with others. If I'm out and about looking, comparing myself with other people, well, I don't have as much stuff, I don't have as nice a clothes, I don't drive as nice a car as that person, I've got better than that, I got better than him, got better than her. When I am out doing that, that tells me where my mind is. It tells me where my priorities and my values are. And it's not on God. Otherwise, my thoughts would be more on how could I bless this person? How could I love this person? How could I serve this person? If my desire is to serve God, my body will be full of light. I will be free of comparisons. Can you imagine what life would be like if we weren't so concerned about how we stacked up alongside other people? Can you imagine the freedom that we live in? If we're not worried about how we look, and we're not worried about our appearance, oh my goodness. What could God do with a person who is more concerned about loving and serving him than about that person when we are so stuck in comparing ourselves with others? Wherever your treasure is, that is where your heart is. That's what we're enslaved to. To be recognized, to own possessions, to achieve peace through financial gain, to be accepted or to be in the in crowd. Where is your heart? We're supposed to love God with what? All our heart. And what? All our mind. All our strength. How are you doing there? What's getting in the way? Is it even possible? You think about this. Is it even possible to achieve peace through financial gain? Through security in our finances? How quickly could our retirement be gone? We get sick. And all of that was saved for retirement now has to go towards taking care of my sickness. And now what happens? How do I feel then? Here comes fear. Oh no, now what? Everything I worked for. The flip side of this coin is that thing that we're not willing to give God is the thing that is ultimately controlling us. That thing that we are not willing to give to God and allow him to have control over is the exact thing that will control us. And it will own us. In my counseling, I've had the amazing opportunity to work with a number of folks who have experienced death in their family, death of loved ones. And our families are so important to us. But it's when we have placed our families as the most important thing in our lives, what happens when they die? Our life crashes in around us. I've talked to lots of people that they have such a hard time dealing with death. They believe in God, but God is not number one. If he was, he would help them through that, and he would remind them, you're going to see that person again. You will see them again. Yes, there's sadness. Yes, there's grief. That's part of the process of death. But death isn't the end all. And if I need my family, if I'm clutching on to my family because I need them, what happens when one dies? The whole world, that's right, the whole world falls apart. My foundation crumbles. Now I start doubting God, the one that I can't doubt God. He's the only thing that's constant, the only thing that's consistent. When I start doubting God, now my foundation is doing this. Whatever the storm is going around me, if my foundation is built securely, number one, on God, I can endure any storm that comes. That's the nature of our relationship with God. That's how he's made us. That's how we have contentment. Even when things are hard, he's created us to have contentment because contentment comes in a relationship with him. It comes in dependence on him. Dependence on the one that will never move, that will never change his mind, the one that is never in a bad mood. God's never moody. When we are his children, he loves us, and the love never changes. We have a quiet church this morning. This is good news, right? This is good news. How many of us would say, let's just do this. How many of you would say that Jesus Christ is the Lord of your life? Okay, that's a lot of us. That's good. Have you ever said no, Lord? We don't get to say no, Lord, if Jesus is the Lord of our life. Jim, this belongs to me. No, Lord, this is mine. Jim, I want this. No, Lord, this is mine. Don't call me Lord if we're not living like he is Lord. To live like Jesus is Lord is to live with hands open. God, whatever you want, it's yours. Whatever you ask for, it's yours. That's what living as Jesus Christ is Lord means. It means when I am anxious and afraid, whatever you ask, Lord. But I'm so scared to do this. I'm so scared to take this risk. I'm so scared to do this. Yes, Lord. That's what happens when Jesus is Lord. He cures us of things because he proves to us that he is powerful enough to do the very thing that we're afraid of. He empowers us to walk into obedience in the very areas that we're so scared to do. What is creating discontentment in your life? And how do you begin transitioning to a place of being this yielded to God to say, yes, Lord? Matthew chapter 6 is our next one. Matthew 6, 25 through 34 says this, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more, or are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall I eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first, if you didn't get anything, this is where this, right here. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all of these things will be given to you as well. All the things that we're afraid of will be given to us. All of our fears will begin to melt away if we seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, which means we turn our backs on the things that we are so concerned about. We don't worry about those things. We press into, God, how can I serve you? Yes, I'm afraid. Yes, I'm nervous. But I'm going to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all of these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Amen? Yes, every day has enough trouble, so why worry about tomorrow? I got to deal with today today. I might not be alive tomorrow, right? So why worry about something I might not even be here for? I'm here now, so I am going to seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and then let God take care of the rest. So, our next fill in the blank. We have to choose to seek first God's kingdom and His righteousness. My attention should be primarily on obeying God. We learn through experience that God will take care of our needs if we choose to let Him. We can't loan God our needs. We can't loan God our problems. We give it to Him, say, God, well, you're not moving fast enough, so I'll just take it back and help you out. That's not giving God our problems. That's loaning Him our problems. We give Him our problems, and then we say, you deal with it. I am going to choose to obey you, even in the midst of what I'm afraid of. Even in the midst of what's hard. And so we learn through experience, which is how we learn. Through experience, we learn that God will come through. If I don't trust Him, He's not going to come through because I'm not trusting Him. I could stand out, like if I walk down here, well, I could just stand here and I could say, well, I could jump down to the floor and I trust that it's there. But if I never jump and find out that the floor is going to catch me, there's no faith. I don't know whether it's going to catch me, so I'm going to live my life up here on the stage. Not a fun place to live our lives, on a stage. The only way I learned that floor is strong enough to catch me is by jumping on it. The only way that we learn that God is powerful enough to walk through our lives with us and to carry us through is by trusting Him and doing it. Otherwise, we never learn. It's only a mental thing. It's only a, well, hopefully God is there. Hopefully God is powerful enough. But if I don't trust Him and if I don't have Him prove it to me, I never know. And so I live in fear. And I live without trusting Him. One of the most powerful stories in the Bible is a story of Abraham and Isaac. God had placed an incredible responsibility on this man named Abraham in the Old Testament. God had selected Abraham to be the father of the Jewish nation. There were no Israelite people before Abraham. God hand-selected this man and said, "You are going to be the father of all who believe." What a responsibility. In order for him to step into this responsibility, he would have to have an amazingly intimate relationship with God. Because he was going to have to believe and trust God, because God was going to ask him to do huge things, world-changing things. And so in order for Abraham to walk in order for God to be able to build the nation of Israel on top of his shoulders, he was going to have to learn that God was trustworthy. And so God asked him to do something that we look at this as absolutely ridiculous. Makes no sense, no logical sense, what God asked Abraham to do. But he had to learn obedience and learn it in a very powerful way. So let's look at Genesis chapter 22. So Abraham was about 75 years old when God came to him. He didn't have any kids. He was about 75 years old. God comes along and says, you're going to have a son. Okay. So he's been waiting 75 years old, and now he's going to become papa for the first time. But that doesn't happen for another 25 years. He has now waited 100 years. He finally has a son. Ah, my son. And then, which God had promised to him. God promised that he was going to have this son. Then this happens. Sometime later, God tested Abraham, and he said to him, Abraham, here I am, he replied. Then God said, take your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you. And early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. Not all of us are parents. Some of us are. For those of us who are parents, think about the concept of what has just happened here. This guy has waited 100 years for a child that God promised him. And now God says, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and kill him and slaughter him. For those of you who are familiar like with Old Testament, when they sacrificed animals, it was bloody. I mean, it's slicing throats and dismembering and cutting things out. And God is asking Abraham to do this with his son. Imagine what's going through his mind. We can't. You can't imagine. If maybe for those of us who have had children who have had like medical problems, or you know, who like their lives were in danger, so, or maybe we've lost children, you'd have an idea as to what this is like. But this is God's command. And when God tells Abraham to do this, his response was, early the next morning he got up and he loaded his donkey. This is obedience. This is obedience when we're asked to do something that doesn't make sense, that's hard, excruciating. So let's keep going. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. And on the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He has now been walking 3 days with his son that he knows that he is going to kill. What kind of mental gymnastics would he have had to do to get himself to a place to be willing to do this? And on the third day, he sees the mountain. Traveling 3 days with his son next to his side. And he gets to the mountain, and he sees the place that he is about to kill his son on. He said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife, and the two of them went on together. No, not there yet. He picks up the knife that he is about to slaughter his son with. And he has a fire that he's going to burn his son's body with. And he takes the wood and he places the wood on the back of his son. Does that remind you of anybody else? Because that's what God the Father did to his son. God never asks us to do something that he hasn't already done. That's why we trust God, because he's already gone before us. And so they went on together. Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, "Father," "Yes, my son." Abraham replied, "The fire and the wood are here," Isaac said, "but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went on together. Can you imagine? This is what obedience does. This is obedience. And so the two went on together. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there, and he arranged the wood on it, and he bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and he took the knife to slay his son, but the angel of the Lord called out from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham, here I am," he replied. You feel like this is hard. This is a hard passage because obedience is hard. Sometimes obedience is excruciating. Sometimes obedience takes everything that is in us to walk with God and to do what he's asked us to do. But when we do that, this is what happens. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Abraham looked up, and there in a thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." The angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time and said, "I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me." When we choose to obey God, things happen in the spirit world. When we choose to back away and choose not to obey, things don't happen. Or God picks someone else. But when we obey, big things happen. The video that you saw up there with Bob, where Bob was talking about equip. All of a number of the folks that stood up just a couple minutes ago, some of them have already finished the EQUIP program, and they're in what's called EQUIP 2.0. EQUIP 2.0 is where you get kicked in the butt. And this is where Maya puts on her to-do list, kick Jim's butt. Because there are now a set of responsibilities that we accept. I'm going to share with you some of the things that have been accepted by folks who have gone through the EQUIP program. Steph and Jess have taken over the women's ministry. That's pretty cool. Jesse and Ed have taken over the men's ministry. That's pretty cool. And Ed's taken over the ushers. That's pretty cool. Maya and Annette are in the process of beginning a respite ministry for families with special needs children. This is stuff that pastors do. Brian and Sandy are helping to lead their own equip groups that are in process right now. That's pretty cool. Jenny took a new job at hospice, working with families grieving the impending death of a loved one. That's pretty good. And she's also lost about 50 pounds and beginning a new focus on holistic health with people who are interested. She's pretty hot. She's my wife. I can say that. I'll pay for that later on. Jill left a secure teaching position to operate a health coaching job where she infuses equip principles in her leadership. That's pretty cool. Steph, Jess, Jenny, Annette, Sandy, Carol, and Maya are all taking a course on biblical counseling, and four of us are training to become certified biblical counselors. This is what happens when people are willing to be obedient. Paula is taking over the leadership of the 2.0 group and will be helping in the future with mentoring relationships. Paula, can I ask? I'm going to get in trouble here. Paula, how old are you? 73. And she has taken over a ministry to run by herself. That is obedience. Nikki wrote a book. And her and Pastor Tim are launching an online ministry that's separate from our church. This is obedience. This is what happens when people walk into obedience hard. Maya threatened me. She threatened to kick my butt. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I was mean. God is using these people to change our community. Not just change our church. Change our community. I ask you the question, do you want to be a part of that? Because you can. You can choose to step into leadership in the kingdom of God if you are willing to do what's hard and what's uncomfortable. We all get that opportunity. Not all people choose it. Most people don't. Most people aren't willing to risk. What if God asks me to do something crazy? Then I better do it. What if he sends me to Africa? Then I better go. Quit being a pansy. And I go, right? Right? Because that's what obedience requires of us. That is the norm for us as believers. Sitting and doing nothing is not the norm. I've been looking forward to this message because I love it. When we learn how to quit being discontent and we learn to allow God to make us content through our relationship with him, he opens up so many doors of obedience, so many doors of blessing. I can't wait to see what these 2.0 equipped 2.0 people, what they accomplish in this next year. And for those of us that are in 1.0, I can't wait to see what God is going to do with you, because it's going to be fun. And for those of you who are not yet in 1.0, in October, we're starting another round. We've already got about 15 or 20 people who have said that they're interested. That's a lot. So if that is something that you would be interested in, it is tough. It's a year's commitment, and there's a lot of people that never finished. A lot of people started and didn't finish because it's hard. It's long. And the stuff that we talk about in there is tough, but it's healing, and it's motivating, and it changes your life. That's what discipleship does. So I'm going to pray. And then we're going to end this, we're going to end our gathering a little bit differently than what we normally do. I may have to apologize to Pastor Tim later on because we're going to do something we don't normally do. But let's go ahead and pray, and then we'll do our last part. So, God, we are so thankful that you love us and you call us to obedience, that you have promised to be with us no matter what. You've promised to never turn your back on us. We are so amazingly blessed that you are our God. And so I pray, Father, that as we finish up our gathering today, that you would begin to work into us a desire for contentment in areas where we have chosen to hold back from you. In fact, right now, God, I pray that you would bring to each person here, bring to our minds what it is, what area that we have become discontent through. Bring that to our mind right now. And then we're going to go with my hands to heaven, shout your praise loud. I was lost in darkness when you pulled me out. I will sing forever of your love come. Lost in darkness when you pull me out, I will sing forever of your love come. With my hands to heaven, shouts your praise is high. I was lost in darkness when you pulled me out. I will sing forever of your love come down. A song we'll sing for all of time. The grave is empty, I am free.
Cause Jesus, rescue me. Cause Jesus, rescue me. I'm a sink for a your praises out. I was lost in darkness when you pulled me out. I will sing forever of your love come down. I will sing forever of your love come down. With my hands to heaven, shout your praises out. I was lost in darkness when you pulled me out. I will sing forever of your love come down. Sing forever of your love come down. I sing forever of your love come down.
We will sing forever what God has done for us. Let's start now. Let's start living in this obedience, in this contentment now. Not when it's convenient. Obedience is never convenient. Right?
Obedience is never convenient.
So, let's start that now. Okay, you can go ahead and sit down, and we got some announcements to go over.
Hey, happy 4th of July.